It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azure Talon? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Oh, crap, I forgot to think of something to talk about. Excuse me. What?
The light coming through. Yes. Sit up.
You look blessed.
I had to close the blinds because otherwise, yeah.
Nonsense. All right. I'm just going to front load it by saying this is going to be a terrible episode.
Oh.
Just to get everybody's expectations under control off the bat. I'm very ill. It's not COVID, but it's very bad. I think thanks to COVID, I'm not used to getting sick anymore. So this one has really taken me by storm. Sorry. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Magic Talking Hat podcast, the only podcast willing to keep going, even when we're terribly sick, for you, the customer. Now, pay us $6.99 plus applicable tax in your area. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 559. 559.
Also, we have to have a talk, people. I have been informed via brainwave communication that will inevitably cause massive tumors to form. But the hat don't care. By the hat, that we only got 3 questions left in the account right now. So we need more of them. For those of you just listening, the backbone of this show is people sending emails to our magical hat, the magical talking hat at gmail.com, so that we can talk about them here. And we're almost out. So send more. Help us, won't you? Okay. So, as I was saying, sorry, a cat just jumped on me. My nibblings at Thanksgiving had a cold. They were passing back and forth that worried their family enough that they both got COVID tests, but it weren't COVID. And then apparently they gave it to me. I didn't notice until I came home Sunday night. And I was like, a little coffee. What's that about? And the next day I was like, and it's the traditional deal. I had a head cold where I just couldn't freaking breathe, and then that went away, and now I have a chest cold where I can't freaking breathe in a different, more alarming way. And I sound like a less talented Harvey Fierstein. So, yeah, I haven't done Jack since we came back from Thanksgiving. Jack, how was your like 12 different Thanksgivings? Good. We had a lot of Thanksgivings.
Well, I mean, yeah, we had people over on Friday, and then we went to the farm, you know, on Saturday, and everything went fine. Nobody has any colds or anything like that.
Did you tell Delmar I said what's up?
I did.
Good. What did he say?
He doesn't really say much of anything. But his mom appreciated it. Mm-hmm. Wanted to greet you in return. I mean, the family back home, I mean, I've actually seen, you know, Delmer and his folks a couple times since the surgery, but Saturday was the first time I've seen anybody from my family since September 11th. So,
oh my goodness,
that was kind of a big deal.
Like the original September 11th, so like 21 years or 20 years.
It's past September 11th. It was the last time I saw it. So that was kind of nice. I no longer have anything like, I don't have any like dressing or bandage or anything over the wound anymore. I'm sleeping in my own bed and I'm doing,
woo!
You know, all the stuff that I used to do the same way I used to do it. I mean, it's not perfect. There's still some issues, but it's nothing is preventing me from going anywhere, or doing anything. I have no restrictions on what I lift or what I do. It's going to be a couple of weeks before it feels entirely normal, but I can do all the normal stuff that I was doing before.
So everything that made you interesting is now gone.
So yeah, I mean, it's going to be 11 weeks tomorrow. So that's about how long it took, about 11 weeks. And if you count, if you're still counting, because I'm still not quite 100%, it'll probably just be another week, 12 weeks, 13 weeks, the whole thing. And it's been quite an ordeal, I'm going to tell you, especially going to school and everything at the same time. It's not like today, I'm really struggling with an assignment I'm working on. So it's like, when the next couple of weeks are over and school's done and the recovery's pretty much done, I don't know.
You're just 3 weeks party.
I don't know what I'm going to do.
I'm going to go on a wild bender.
I'll have 3 weeks before classes start again, but I still have WISP to finish, you know? So I'm like, well, what should I do? Should I just pick up working again on something else? Or should I like really take some time off? I don't know.
The decision isn't complicated. You should really take some time off. The question really is, will you be able to do that? And I am less sure of that.
But so anyway, it was good to see everybody after so much time. And I think they were, you know, Dad was here on September, he was in town on September 17th. He didn't see me. He didn't come to the hospital, couldn't come to the hospital. But he was just in town. He just felt like he needed to be nearby when the surgery happened. So,
did no one tell him that Paul's had closed?
The good one.
I assumed he was just there to pick up stuff at Paul's.
Wow, Paul's. Well, there's a Tyson's here. So, is there Fleet Farm around here too? I think there is.
Farm and Fleet or Fleet Farm?
Fleet Farm.
Well, there's also one called Farm and Fleet.
That's what I'm thinking of. Anyway. I think it bothered him that he hadn't seen me in so long. So I think he was very relieved. I don't know. It's you know, obviously we're communicating in text and everything, but it's almost like, I'm not going to believe you're okay until I can see you in person. And, you know, see me walking around and see that I'm all right, you know?
Yeah, no, I've assumed it's like a Max Headroom situation. I assumed you died on the operating table and they just digitized a certain amount of your consciousness into the Zoom app.
Yeah, that was good to see everybody. And I guess we'll be getting together here in December and everything's just going to go back to normal, mostly. You know, nobody seems to, you know, it's still difficult for me to process sometimes when I think of being a cowboy, you know. It's just weird to know you've got some piece of machinery in you that's keeping you alive.
Mo.
I don't know. Freaks me out when I think about it. So I try not to think about it, obviously, but I don't know. You just don't.
There's an author who I watched on YouTube for a while because she would do these videos about writing advice. But then I frequently figured out that it was mostly just about making fun of certain tropes and stuff, and I didn't find it helpful, so I stopped watching. But she always listed herself as best-selling author and cyborg, but she never specified. Like, there was nothing visually obvious, so I'm very curious, like, what's the thing in her? And there's so many different options these days, but there's so many cyborgs around, and cowborgs, and pigborg, which doesn't sound good.
Yeah, but, you know, you just... It's funny how it impacts your outlook, you know, to when you feel like your whole existence is contingent on something that, you know, 50 years ago might not have been a thing. You would just be dead, you know? It's so weird. It's very weird. It's hard to wrap your brain. It's hard for me anyway to wrap my brain around. So
I paid that surgeon to take a dive, damn it.
Dive.
That's what they call it.
Yeah. Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah. In the industry of purposefully tanking life-saving operations. She's supposed to be like, oh, oops. And then the scalpel goes through the thing.
Through the thing.
Such a butterfingers. Do we have another one of these? I accidentally cut his out. Do we have another one? I know I'm supposed to know. Okay, it's been a very stressful day.
That's good. I like that. Anyway, so what about you? Because you've been traveling and whatnot and been sick and everything.
Thanksgiving was fine. It was good to see everybody again. I was worried I wasn't going to see the niece very much because she was still feeling sick, but then we got to see her. And that was cool. And then I came home and spent the week with this bullshit. It is very interesting. I like to think I would have been like this before, but I'm very keenly aware, even though this isn't COVID, of not wanting to spread it. Like contagion is much more at the forefront of my mind. So, like, I had to cancel appointments that I had this week. I pushed one back to Monday, and I'm already like, I don't think I'm going to be okay by Monday. This weekend, we were going up. Do you remember when I had an alpaca at my business meeting? Well, that farm has a little Airbnb cabin that's in the middle of their llama and alpaca enclosure. So you can theoretically go on the deck and llamas and alpacas may approach you. And my sister-in-law is spending the weekend there. And we were going to go up and hang out with her all weekend. And I think Trish still will, but I won't. Because I sound awful. I feel like that's a new thing. I'm much more conscious of not wanting to get it on other people. And in the past, I'd be like, yeah, it's cold. I'm probably fine. But nowadays, I'm like, no, we want to be very careful. So I think I'm seeing a little bit of lessons learned from COVID that I like.
I think it's probably less an issue of, say, not worrying about other people getting sick, but not really being aware of how easy it is for other people to like, I think before, a lot of people thought, I'm not going to be making out with this person. They're not going to get sick with me just, you know, showing up and being in the same room. Well,
nobody looked that sick to me at Thanksgiving. And like the teenager was sick, and so she couldn't come to things. When she showed up, she didn't look sick to me. Nobody sounded like this. Trish, miracle of miracles, as is often the case, seems to be unaffected. Her immune system just kicks ass. I don't understand it. It was a harrowing weekend, though, because I wasn't sick yet. But I did throw out my back.
Oh, no.
Yes.
How'd you do that?
And like, I think it was mostly the guest bed and me trying to like sit up in the guest bed to watch movies on my phone or on my laptop and things like that. It was not a place I should have been doing that. Add to that, I had kind of been not going to the gym the week before because the week was weird because of Thanksgiving. And I was just sitting around one time at the dining table talking to people and something like, and it's bad. It's better now. That thing is gone, which makes sense because I've basically been sleeping in my bed and sitting on my own couch all the time, all week long. So things are back to normal. But yeah, I've been kind of getting beat up. We tried to watch the Jungle Cruise movie. Or rather, most of my family watched the Jungle Cruise movie. I was about halfway through, and then I had to go lay down because of my back. But it is funny because I think the reason we were going to watch it was because I had talked to you, and then I talked to my sister, who's like, yeah, it's dumb, but it's funny. And I was like, yeah, we should see it. And so then most of the family had already seen it, but they're like, we'll watch it again. And then I couldn't see it also. But I think my father-in-law really loved it. I didn't get, like, I knew that was sort of a joke or whatever, but it is a legit part of the plot that The Rock's character, who runs the little boat, makes all the dumbass jokes from the Jungle Cruise ride. I was not aware of that, but that's like a plot point. Also, I am fascinated by the ever-growing career of Jack Whitehall as a movie star. Jack Whitehall plays Emily Blunt's brother, and he's the palest, most wafer thin little young Englishman of privilege and pleasure you ever did see. And that's how he's always been. He's sort of a posh Victorian waif kind of thing. But he's suddenly in a bunch of things in movies. And in fact, I think in the new Clifford the Big Red Dog, he plays the American dad, which I'm like, he's the most British person ever. And I think he's only 13. So I don't know what the hell you're doing. But I've been following as a comedian for a while, so it's very weird to see that. But we finished season one of Ted Lasso. I don't know. We'll probably have a little break before season two, but I don't know. That'll kind of be up to Trish. We also finished season one of Doom Patrol. And I got to admit, if it had turned out that that was the end of Doom Patrol, not a bad ending. Like, we kind of end on some cliffhangers, but they're of the low level that I'm like, yeah, that could just be sort of the joke ending. Like, we go from there. Like, not stuff that I'd be like, how did they do it? Like, what happened next? No, it would have been comfortable. But that show is growing on me.
I keep forgetting to tell you that Foundation is done.
Yes.
And I mean,
that's on our list. Oh yeah.
Oh, it's on your list. Okay.
Yeah, we got a lot of lists. We're still doing Owl House, but I think that's it. Nothing's really happened to me, so let's do a question. But people, you need more questions. We're going to be out of questions. All right, I'll do one. This is from Beth Westlake. Williams Pride Apple. Dear TMTH, did you know there is an apple variety called Williams Pride? If so, have you tried it? And if so, how does it compare to the Hawkeye apple? And then there's a link to what I assume is a virus.
Williams Pride?
Williams Pride.
Never heard of that.
Here we are at Allen's Orchard. Let's look at the apple varieties. William's Pride. Sweet tart flavor. Excellent for eating. Hint of spice. Usually ripens in mid to late August. So it's just like you.
Yeah. All those things describe me.
Yes.
Me. Also me.
You and your hint of spice.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know how they know about the hint of spice. I thought that was something only certain people were aware of, but whatever.
You do famously ripen in mid to late August, however.
So William's Pride, is William's possessive or is it plural? Not plural.
In the version I'm seeing on the website, it is plural. In the things Beth talked about, it was possessive. So
the person who developed the apple, his last name is Williams, like Joe Williams or something.
Oh.
Presume.
We've got a new thing when I go to the store for apples. Trish likes any apple that has John in it. Any of the Jonathan hybrids she loves. Jonna Gold. I think her favorite is the Jonna Mac. But I got some Jonna Golds and some Jonna, I don't know what others there are. There's suddenly a whole bunch of apple varieties. I don't feel like it used to be a thing.
You ever tried a Williams Pride? Were you familiar with that
before you mentioned it? I thought it was some sort of turkey. I had never heard of this before.
I never heard of it. I'm excited to try it, but I don't know where am I going to, how is that going to happen? Who sells them?
More importantly, is williamspride.com available? We'll snatch that up.
The thing is, Abby would definitely have bought Williams Pride apples if she'd ever seen them anywhere. So I'll bet they're not a thing that you see around here very much, or else.
I'm sure. Pilgrim's Pride.
That's
the turkey. That's why. It sounds very similar.
Oh, okay. William Pilgrim. It's easy.
And you act very puritanical.
I don't know about that.
Always wearing hats. Accusing people of witchcraft.
Oh, that part, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All the time.
But like in a fun way. Like you're not mad about it. Like you've been practicing witchcraft.
I'm not mad.
Somebody's been having dalliances with the black goat. Just all the time. This guy knows how to sell his soul in a buyer's market. Ah, got my eye on you. Ah, that's good. We're fine.
Oh, man.
I don't know what I'm going to put this character in, but I want to put him in something.
It's brilliant. That was all genius stuff right there. Totally genius.
Just all about accusing people of witchcraft, but like isn't mad. Just like.
And you just did that right off the top of your head. That's amazing.
No, I've been plotting that for 4 days.
Maybe you should be sick more often.
Bite your tongue. I do not like this.
Maybe for you, creative juices and mucus are the same thing.
Oh. Just for that, we're calling this episode Creative Mucus. It's your fault. It was going to be William's Pride, but now you've ruined it. For everyone.
No, seriously, that was genius. That was just perfect. All of that was so funny.
I do feel good about that one.
Yeah, you should.
I didn't even have therapy. So, okay. I like my therapist. In fact, we've come to terms with this. In fact, I told her one day, I was like, remember in the beginning where I wasn't sure if you were helping me and you were pretty sure that you weren't, but you were too professional to just say that. And she's like, yeah. So I was like, I think it's working now.
Yeah.
But, you know, she already famously told me, what do you want me to do about it? But now the latest one is, so I was supposed to meet in person, but on Monday, I'm like, let's do Zoom, because this is a crazy. And I get on Zoom, and I believe the first thing she says is, how's it going? And I started to speak, and she's like, oh, Tony, you sound horrible. We can shelve this if you want. I'm like, that's not, you don't want your therapist just right out front. So we did. We skipped it. Because I was like, I don't know what to talk about. I'm not even sure you're real. Like, yeah. So I think it's fine because nothing's happening. Oh, except last night, after many months of confusion over whether or not Trish wanted to watch it, we finally watched it. Barb and Star Go to Vista Del Mar. Available on Hulu or probably other places if you want to spend money for it. It is weird.
Weird, huh?
Yeah. I asked Trish what she thought, and she's like, I'm still not sure what I saw. It's mostly a comedy. It occasionally becomes a musical. It's like, I don't know. It's very weird. Check it out if you want to. It's weird. Or skip it. You can never. It does crack me up, though, because Jamie Dornan is in it from 50 Shades. And something about this whole thing just smacks of, he had just finished doing 50 Shades and he's like, I'll take anything that's completely different. And so he did.
So he did.
It's a very Kristen Wiig joint. If you think you like Kristen Wiig's comedy, this is just a whole movie of Kristen Wiig's comedy. So see what you think.
She is pretty funny. I don't know about a whole movie's worth, though.
Yeah. Let's do another question.
Oh, okay. That means me.
Yes. Sorry, I was hoping to spare you from that.
This
I've
is from,
got such an ab workout going. My abs hurt so much from all the coughing.
This is from Stu. Stu. Weirdly, he signs it and then says more stuff. I don't.
Hey, that's the joy of the new format. You can do that here.
Stu says, cheese and peanut butter is an excellent taste combination. For example, in a sandwich. Discuss. Stu, and then he goes on to say, when I was very young, elementary school age, on one occasion we ran out of enough cheese and enough peanut butter to make a sandwich, so my dad combined what was left of the two. I've eaten them together since. Huh. Mm. That's a charming little story.
Interesting.
I mean, I too have had peanut butter with cheese. I don't remember when that was. I recall finding it to be good, but not so good that I've, like, on many occasions had it again. Because
peanut butter is mixes well with a lot of things.
Yeah, it sure does. Well, when you think about it, that shouldn't be too surprising. I mean, there's, like, peanut oil is used in a lot of cuisine as, like, a usual flavoring, and it does. It goes with just about everything you put it with. So... But yeah, I mean, I don't, usually I have peanut butter by itself or with jelly or whatever. I mean, I'm a peanut butter and jelly fan, as everybody knows, but I've had it with cheese and yeah, it tastes good, but I don't have it often. I don't know if I've even had it one other time since the first time I tried it, but it was good. It's all right.
We had a lot of peanut butter variants growing up. Peanut butter and jelly, peanut butter and honey.
Yeah, we had that too.
Peanut butter and banana.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Peanut butter and raisin.
Had that, but that would be good.
peanut butter and dill pickle.
Yep.
I was not a big fan of that one, but it happened. And then
I like that one. I have that sometimes.
And then I learned of my cousins who did peanut butter and mustard, which I have talked about before. And this is just French's yellow mustard. And again, if you like mustard, it's fine. It tastes like mustard, but with the consistency of peanut butter.
Well, if you didn't put like peanut butter and bologna, say, like a...
No.
Yeah, we would have peanut butter with not just bologna, but any kind of lunch meat or cold meat sometimes.
Never had that. In college, one of our friends would put peanut butter on his hamburgers and on his Sloppy Joes.
And on a hamburger, yep. Sloppy Joes, no, but...
I've had it on a hamburger since. I've been in a restaurant that did it, and it was good. And I love Thai peanut sauce.
Yeah.
In any form, everywhere.
That's exactly right.
I feel like I must have tried peanut butter and cheese. Because I love peanut butter and I love cheese and I love smushing together things I love. So.
Butter and ice cream of various types, like chocolate ice cream or vanilla
ice cream. Peanut butter ice cream itself is one of my favorite things. I love peanut butter flavored ice cream. Or the varieties of Blue Bunny has one called Peanut Butter Panic. That's really good. Yeah, I should give it. Stu, give us more on what kind of cheese. It's obviously not going to be American cheese because you were growing up in Wales, like that one kid at Christmas. And so probably cheddar.
Seems like it would be really good with Swiss. I don't know why, but
I can see that. I can see that. But yeah, talk to us about that, Stu. Answer our questions vis-a-vis. Like, and is it chunky or smooth peanut butter?
I was smooth peanut butter with cheddar. That's what I had, and it was good. But
I grew up with chunky peanut butter. Later in life, I've decided. I mean, I kind of don't care. I like them all. But I tend to get creamy now. I don't really know why. I'm so tired.
Well, I get peanut butter that's like ground. I mean, I'm grinding it there at the store. So it's not chunky, but it's not smooth either. It's, you know,
it's in between. Went through a variety of different brands over the years, but there was a time period where we were doing Adams peanut butter, which their whole commercial was you take a roasted, lightly salted peanut and smash it. And the whole commercial was sort of a stop motion thing, going back to caveman times, and they would put a peanut on a little rock and then they would push an elephant onto it to smash it. And then we eventually got to Adams peanut butter factories, and it was literally just a conveyor belt of peanuts going in, and you would hear the elephant and the thud over and over, and it would move along by one, and Adams peanut butter would come out the other side. So yeah, they were smashing individual peanuts with elephants. But that was the serious stuff, where you either had to stir it up every time or just keep it. Everybody always talks about, like, oh, with the natural stuff, you have to stir the oil every time or keep it in the fridge.
Yeah, you can keep it in the
fridge. If you keep it in the fridge, it doesn't do it. It's fine. Like all your other condiments. Come on. Not a hardship. Deal with it. But nowadays, I'll just usually buy the store brand. Trish says, pick your choice. I'll have to test this out. Because I love cheese and I love peanut butter. So make this happen, Stu. Get on the blog. Tell us specifics. Maybe what kind of bread, too. That would be nice. All right. I'm doing this. I'm reading the last one.
Boy.
I don't know what we're going to do next week, people. If y'all don't write in.
Probably just important. Not have any questions like a lot of times we don't.
I want them to be bothered.
Oh, okay. Well, they probably won't be because we almost sometimes. There's just too many times where we don't read anything. Just saying. Bad habits. We have bad habits.
All right, last one. This is from Mick De Knife. Opinions on stories of whore roar, spelled capital H, capital O, capital R, dash roar. Hi hat. I have been watching a lot more horror media than I usually do, and it's got me wondering why I'm finding it more enjoyable than I used to. I'm talking classic horror movies like It and The Shining, horror video games like Five Nights at Freddy's or Poppy Playtime, and thriller TV shows like Squid Game. I think I found my preferences when it comes to horror thriller stories. Sorry, horror slash thriller stories. First, the scares can't come cheap. Simple jump scares aren't entertaining to me. They're just a moment of unpleasant discomfort. Second, the story has to have an interesting structure. I think It, for example, is a classic tale of growth and facing fears. Third, no nihilism, please. I have never understood how one can get enjoyment from everything dying, evil winning, etc. So what do the hat wranglers think? What makes a good horror story for you?
Well, that was weird because I could easily have written that myself. Pretty much all those sentiments I share completely. From the fact that I have not seen
you and Mick in a photograph together in a very long time.
From the fact of taking in more horror than I used to, because that is a thing I've noticed myself. You know, used to be we would, Abby and I would kind of get into horror stuff around October, and then the rest of the time, maybe not so much. Now we're watching it all the time. It's like a regular thing that we do. I've actually gone out of my way to watch some classic horror stuff that I thought I'd never watch. Most of them are things that I ended up not liking and I expected to not like, but I didn't really watch it because I thought I'd like it. I watched it because suddenly I'm in this frame of mind where I feel like this is a cultural thing. I should watch it. I never felt that way about horror before. I was like, I don't care if it's a cultural thing. I don't want to watch it. But now I almost feel like I have it's enough. Horror is enough of a thing that I consume that I feel like I should know what the classic stuff is like or whatever. So a whole different attitude about it than I used to have. But all of those things, also all of those things that Mick mentioned about things that he likes, same with me. I guess I don't tend to think of myself as becoming a horror fan. I'm a fan of thrillers, and that can include supernatural thrillers or thrillers that overlap enough with horror that they're often just called that. But, you know, a lot of the stuff I watch, I might be thinking of it as a thriller because that's what I like about it, the thriller aspects of it. But it's, you know, it's in the horror genre or whatever.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm not a big gore hound or anything, but too many things that fall into the thriller camp I find boring. So I usually stick with saying I'm a big horror nerd, which I am. And I grew up terrified of that stuff. I think there's a component to that. I think the older you get, the more you're like, oh, this isn't the shit we should be afraid of. Like, there's plenty of real shit in the world to be scared of. And this is just a nice break. Whereas when you're little, all that kind of shit could be real, you know? And it scares.
Well, when I was young, I was interested in ghost stories. Not really long form movies or whatever, but just those brief little things that you tell around a campfire. And I was also interested in monsters as a motif, very interested in monsters for some reason, and monster stories. But again, the short form kind of ghost story type stories, not, you know, I wasn't interested in watching. I was interested in, say, the universal monsters as archetypes and motifs, but I really didn't care about watching the movies or anything about the movies back then. And part of it was I didn't see that there was a huge, there was a dramatic, significant difference between a ghost story and a joke. To me, that they were very similar in the fact that it's a brief story and you're trying to press certain emotional buttons, maybe different emotional buttons in both cases, but there were a lot of similarities between those two things. And I was always fascinated with conversation and conversational things, like telling a, like if you're in a conversation and you're telling a story that you want to be accurate, factually accurate, versus a story that you don't care if it's factually accurate and nobody else seems to care. Like, how do you signal to someone that you're not telling the story exactly accurately? And everybody knows that. They know that you're not delivering the news. They know you're exaggerating. They know you're telling a fish story or whatever. It
takes a lot of time and effort until you just develop a reputation and people know he's full of shit.
Then there's jokes and then there's scary stories. And then there are like analogies and thought experiments people use in conversation. All of these things always fascinated me. And when I was in college, I sort of got interested in fiction as a way to maybe express some of my own ideas. And that's how I eventually sort of moved into appreciating long form stories of various kinds. First, hard science fiction. And it's been a real long journey to getting to like, say, Mary Shelley's Frankenstein or Bram Stoker's Dracula. And then that, of course, transfers over to movies and things like that. But it's been a long journey to get to a place where, and I still don't appreciate or really like, say, high fantasy or things of that nature. But maybe that's yet to come. I mean, you know, maybe pretty soon I'll find that I really want to sit down and read Tolkien or something. But I kind of doubt it. But I didn't think I'd ever like Frankenstein or Dracula to read the books. I didn't think I'd ever like that. Yeah. Or to read a book this thick of Nathaniel Hawthorne's short stories. I never thought that I would be that guy, but I loved reading it.
We all were pretty sure you were that guy. And that only guy, just you.
Oh, if it's just a process that I've been part of since starting college, or if, like you said, there's a little bit of a, you get a certain age, you know, like Mick, you know, you get a certain age and you start to think of, like you said, you start to think of things a little bit different and it gives you a different appreciation for that kind of material. I don't know.
Well, yeah, there's the appreciation for symbolism and that kind of thing that you couldn't have when you were younger. And I do feel like it's a genre that gets a lot more credit these days and is pushing a little harder. And horror, the transgressive nature of horror has always been a big thing to me. Very fact that there's stuff you can see in horror movies that you won't see in other movies. Which is funny because a lot of the things I'm not interested in, again, going back to the whole, the violence inherent in man sort of thing, hell, I bailed on Sweet Tooth because I'm like, it's another post-apocalyptic where the real bad guy is humans. I don't care. Go away. If Satan's not running the show, I am not interested. I realize that there's something I didn't tell you that happened that is directly related to this kind of thing. So I don't know if you're familiar with a podcast called You're Wrong About. It's really having a moment right now. Like, it's blowing up. Everybody's telling me to listen. And my wife finally made me listen a couple times, but she keeps pushing me. And the thing is, it's a good thing. And it's these two people, I don't remember who they are. And basically one of them researches a thing that happened in fairly recent history and talks about how the way history has remembered it is not accurate to how it went down. And over time, the podcast is slowly morphing into dealing with topics related to moral panic. And part of that is one of the people on the show is actually writing a book on the satanic panic experience or whatever. But like the one that Trisha made me listen to a long time ago was the Super Bowl Justin Timberlake, Janet Jackson wardrobe malfunction.
Right.
And like what happened and the fallout from that. And it's a very different story than you expect. But so my wife trying to get me to listen to more of this, I'm like, whatever, we'll see. And then she finds out, and separately I find out, that the latest episode is about the Warrens. And you know how much I love to hate the Warrens.
Yes, I know.
So I'm like, yeah, we're going to listen to this. So we listened to it on the trip to driving to Chillicothe. We listened to it, and I wasn't wrong about a lot. They were somewhat bigger pieces of shit than I realized. And that's the thing. It's not, you can do the whole, like, were they con artists or were they believers? And the truth is actually probably somewhere in the middle, but like they definitely fucked over people and harassed people into getting what they want so they could get a book deal and shit like that. And that's the funny thing is they actually had a guest host, and the person talking about it is like they're a very mixed bag, because there are some instances where they ended up probably helping lift some families out of poverty by making this a news story or whatever. And I don't doubt that, but that's not why they did that. Every time they did it, it was to suit their own ends. And sometimes by coincidence, that helped other people. Far more often, it ended up ruining lives. And what was very interesting is listening to the whole thing made me rethink my whole not watching the Conjuring movies issue. And I kind of went full circle by the end, right back to where I am, which is, yeah, I don't think I'm going to bother. Because the movies are so ridiculously unrelated to the actual Warrens. They also go a fair bit towards glorifying them in ways that I'm not happy about. And yeah, there so many lawsuits have come out of those movies and out of a whole bunch of other things, and it's they're pieces of shit, and so it is, and I still don't enjoy it, but whatever. I feel it's, again, feeling a little bit out of the zeitgeist. I'm like, I haven't watched the Conjuring movies. How can I call myself a horror fan? Like, that's a big part of it or whatever. But I'm like, no, I'll do okay. People don't do a lot of deep dives discussing the symbolism in the Conjuring movies, so.
Well, I think there are a lot of, I mean, this is something I've been thinking about a lot lately is, you know, because working on this story, Mist, I mean, it's a supernatural story. If anyone had told me 20 years ago,
you met Wisp.
Yeah.
You said Mist.
Oh, sorry. Did I?
You didn't. That's weird. You didn't write that game.
No. Sorry. I don't know. That must have been some kind of Freudian slip of some kind.
It might be because I'm stuffed up and I heard it.
I probably said it wrong. I say things wrong all the time. But anyway, Wisp. Yes. Sorry. You know, that's a supernatural story. And if someone told me 20 years ago, if someone told me 25 years ago, I'd be writing anything. I'd probably be surprised, but a supernatural story, I wouldn't have believed it. And I think, so I've been thinking about this. It's like, is this where I'm going? I mean, am I going to end up, you know, I've always thought of myself as being someone who would write science. If I was going to write any fiction at all, it would be science fiction, probably hard science fiction, which is like Constable Blue Hawk stuff is kind of that. But I've written a lot, and the novels I've written are, I tried to be cheeky and clever and try to make them the thing you could go either way on. But in my mind, you know, as if I count myself as a fan of my own work, you know, I obviously
somebody has to.
Yeah, I obviously thought more of a in a science fiction way than a fantasy way. But you know, I've gotten interested in these type telling these types of stories, and I'm writing this story. And is that where I'm going to end up? And if I do, why is that? I've come to the conclusion, well, not really conclusion, but the idea that there are some themes that you can kind of address or tackle in horror or supernatural thriller that would be harder or not as effective in a science fiction setting. I mean, on one hand, you can do anything in a science fiction setting that you can do in a fantasy or horror setting. But I think it's, I think if you go ahead and commit to it 100% and just go all the way into it being a supernatural or mysterious or interdimensional, whatever, I think there's something about that that's a little bit more effective and powerful than, because a lot of times when you do the same kind of thing in a science fiction, it comes off as not being science fiction anyway, right? It, like, look at Star Wars, for example. I mean, a person could easily try to come up with science fiction-y explanations for the Jedi or whatever, but no ordinary person.
No, I think Star Wars is one of the ones that sort of helped create the term science fantasy.
Yeah, yeah. This is what I'm saying. It's if you...
Well, but that's where I always think you should be, is tell the story you want to tell and sort of don't worry about the genre. The best stories are unidentifiable in genre or multi-genre. You say like a sci-fi setting might be more or less good than a horror setting. I'm like, you can have both.
Yeah, right, right. That's right.
At the same time.
Well, you know, and
I like speculative fiction, which was a term I knew before, but you use a lot, and that has started resonating. I also just say genre fiction nowadays a lot, because I'm like, I don't care. Tell the story you want to tell, and let's see what happens.
Well, I mean, a lot of most of the fiction I like, regardless of what genre it falls in, is some kind of speculative fiction. It's a what if kind of scenario. If it's supernatural, if it's not supernatural, if it's a little of science and supernatural, it's all a what if story kind of. And that's, I like that kind of stuff. And I think that's a lot of what I liked about early ghost stories too, because it was, to me, they were like, you know, what if there are such a thing as ghosts, you know? And well, like one of my favorite ghost stories was about the hitchhiker, right? Where you pick up a hitchhiker and you take this person home, and you go up to the front door, and their mother's there, and you say, "Oh, my daughter, I brought your daughter home. It's raining and she's all wet and everything. She's waiting in the car." And then the mom says, "Oh, well, you need to come with me." And then you find out that the daughter's actually dead or whatever. The thing that I like about stories like that is that it, for me, psychologically, it's like, oh yeah, if ghosts existed, that's a thing that could exist, and it would really freak you out.
Also, I mean, William really enjoys stories about dead young women.
No.
That's very much his brand. If there's a story that has a dead young woman in it, he's like, I'm there.
I don't know what other people get out of ghost stories, but for me, it is totally a speculative fiction kind of thing. Like, oh my gosh, I'm glad I don't believe in ghosts, because if I did, I'd be constantly paranoid that I was being watched or that some, you know, something.
I think that's a thing for me. It's very, I often wonder, like, why do I love this kind of story? And yet I have no belief in this kind of stuff. And I'm like, that might be the point, is I can play around in this playground of the supernatural, the preternatural, and I'm not stressed by it because I don't believe in it. But I didn't spend my whole life not believing in it. So what does that mean? Because I used to believe in that kind of stuff, especially in my adolescence.
They are things that sort of freak me out when I put myself in that space of believing, right? It's like, whoa, yeah. This is creepy. I'm glad I don't believe in this, or I'd be freaked out all the time, probably wondering about stuff like that.
That's but I've had that attached to a lot of religious things too for a while, because I had a fair number of fundamentalist Christian acquaintances, I think, for lack of a better term, and I would kind of try and probe them on that, because I'm like, if I thought most people I knew and most people in the world were gonna spend eternity burning in hell unless I could convince them otherwise, I mean, stress doesn't begin to cover it. I wouldn't be able to sleep. I would be losing my mind over that. And yeah, same thing. Like, if I believed in ghosts and stuff, if I was like the Warrens, well, okay, not shitty, but you know, if I was a professional ghost hunter, I'm like, yeah, I would be constantly worried about that kind of stuff.
Yeah. It seems like I noticed that people who do believe don't seem that freaked out about it. So it makes me wonder, is your belief somehow different than I'm imagining? Or like you were just saying, if you believed that everybody was going to burn in hell unless you did something about it, obviously there a lot of Christians don't really think about it like that. So there must be something else, you know.
And I have heard there are explanations tied into it, and essentially, if you're one of the good ones, Jesus is going to show up at some point and set you straight. And they just have to hope that'll happen, because they're also willing to acknowledge that they can't make me believe, despite taking a lot of effort to try and make me believe. But no, this it gets weird too, because I absolutely don't believe in this stuff. That being said, you could not get me to go with you on a ghost hunting night locked in abandoned insane asylum or whatever. I just wouldn't do it. And it would largely have to do with not being like, it would freak me out. And I don't believe in it, but there's a little hindbrain thing or a little bit of grown up or whatever. I would be terrified. So I don't know how we got here. I never do. It's probably time for more cough medicine.
Oh, okay.
Okay, people. Write in. We have no questions now. The hat is empty. It's only happened like twice before. Maybe three times. We're scared. So go to the blog and tell us your thoughts. Give me get well wishes, because I need them to get well. Also, listen next week. Also, it might not be an also. It might be it. Also, nothing.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.